Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, who did you wear? Who did you meet? Tell us all about it.
Well, it's who I didn't. No, I met everyone. I met President Trump. I talked to him for a little bit.
Really?
You got me to do my impression of him meeting me?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. A natural beauty. Wow.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm trying to get him on the show.
But that's a terrible Trump impersonation.
It was horrible, but the hand thing was this. You know,
he was stunned.
Stunned into silence, yes. Huh?
You know?
No, but it was,
You never know if things go bad with Melania.
Yeah. Well, okay, so speaking of Melania, so I get there and I run into Marjorie Taylor Greene right away. My sister is in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
Just loves her. And talked to her for a while and, you know, because she used to put up with a lot of crap, especially from...
Your sister or
Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she's been so strong the way she handles them and the way she handled Jim Acosta. I know if you want to go on her Twitter, you could see what she's, you know, has to put up with all the time. But met her. She was wonderful. Then I saw Sean from Elmwood Park.
Wow. Sean... All the stars were out at Mar-a-Lago last night.
No, but Congressman Gates and Nunes and they were all there.
You're sort of burying the lead. You start with Trump saying, wow, and then then all of a sudden we're at Sean from Elmwood Park. So wait, let's go back to the president and then what happened?
Yeah, so he was walking down the stairs. The Secret Service was kind of gathering. So, and I know from being a reporter, and then they put a line up, and I said, oh, he's coming down.
And a security threat.
And yeah, thank you. He's coming down those stairs. So I just walked over there. I wasn't competing with anybody to get his attention. And then he saw you from across the courtyard. No, I was stalking him at the bottom of the stairwell where I knew he was coming out.
Uh-huh.
He's got lost a lot of weight. Oh, my God. He looks like. He must have lost 40 pounds.
Really? Well, that's good for him.
But he looked, he seemed a little agitated. And then I watched him watching the movie 2000 Mules. He was laser focused on that film. He didn't squirm
in
his chair.
I'm not interested in his movie review of 2000. So he says, wow. And then
what a natural beauty.
And that's it?
And then I said,
there's no conversation?
No, I said, well, I work for Salem Media. We want you to come on the show. And he said, okay, you know, we'll do it. And then he was whisked away.
That was it?
That was it.
Oh.
But I met Kyle Rittenhouse. I met...
I saw Kyle Rittenhouse's picture with Laura Logan. He has very good discipline.
He
is... With his vision. He's very, very focused on the camera and not focused on other things he could be focused on.
Laura said to say hi to you. She said, I remember you and your co-host. What was his name? I said, Dan Proft. But yeah, she was...
How quickly they forget.
Yeah. But real quick, Trump, though, watching the movie, you can tell he was, and after the movie ended, he was just angry. And
did he throw things? Did he break things?
No. I mean, he talked before the film, and I was right there to talk about, you know, how it was an election day. It was an election month.
What happened and what took place on this horrible, during this horrible period of time, because we no longer have one-day voting. We have this months before, many cases after, unfortunately. But that was a terrible period of time for our country, and the results are there to look at. We look at inflation. We had no inflation. You look at...
And he went on to talk about, you know...
Wait, were you allowed to record that? Was that event off the record? Were you allowed to record that? Is that a violation? Are you going to be arrested?
Again? Never been arrested.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
But then 2,000 Mules, I was pretty agnostic about this whole thing, as Dennis Prager was, about... voter fraud and the 2020 election being stolen from Trump. I am not at all anymore. And I came home last night and I said, I think the election was stolen. And my kids painted out, no, Mom, you just got brainwashed. You went to 24-hour brainwashing. And then I showed them the trailer.
Strap it down and make them watch 2,000 Mules.
Well, I made them watch the trailer and they, you know, they're like, okay, well, I want to see more. And then they say, oh, so Trump paid for that, right? Trump paid. I said, no, Salem Media, who I've been working for 12 years, is the executive producer of that film, along with Dinesh D'Souza. And so it is fascinating because this is not grainy black and white video where you see people going from ballot box to ballot box. This is in color, very crisp, and you can see voter fraud happening before your eyes. And they actually thought that from seeing the trailer, they said, well, that's staged. I said, no, that is what happened. So I'm going to make them watch the whole. But you guys should all see it. And it's been sold out. And they took 2,000 mules off Twitter yesterday.
Well, that's no surprise.
For misinformation.
Musk isn't in charge yet.
I know. Well, when he gets in charge, he should definitely do it. But if you want to see it, we're having a virtual premiere Saturday, tomorrow, May 7th. So go to 2000mules.com. And that's 2000mules.com to see it. But also, too, I got...
What other stars? Or, you know, what other brushes with greatness?
Matt Gaetz. He's gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, you don't have to tell me, sister. Yeah, okay.
No, I'm just saying... I just met... There's everybody who is anybody. Kellyanne Conway, I talked to her. I talked to Jason Miller. He said to say hi to you.
Oh, good. That's
and my friend Lissa, he said to say hi to both
of you, too. I'm sure.
He's doing well. He was there with a lady friend. And Sebastian Gorka. Mm-hmm. We talked to him for a while. And Dennis Prager.
Did Sebastian Gorka have a scarf on?
He did not. He had a red bow tie on.
Good.
Yes. But our president, Dave Santrella, was there. And Ed Asner. I met everybody.
Ed Asner?
Yeah. Not Ed Asner.
Ed Asner's not. I don't think he would be there, first of all, if he was still here on this planet, which I don't believe he is. Is that Asner still alive? Ed Asner not alive.
I'm butchering the owner.
Ed Atzinger.
Ed Atzinger.
He owns the station.
Ed Atzinger was there.
Or the founder of the station.
I met him for the first time.
Yeah, Ed Asner, leftist Hollywood type.
And then
Ed Atzinger radio station.
And we got there at 5 o'clock and everybody had, you know, hors d'oeuvres and cocktails around the pool.
Oh,
I didn't drink at all, but then somebody fell in the pool.
Who fell in the pool?
Some random guy. I don't know who it was, but
random guy? Like, how does a...
He tripped because everybody...
There's no random people. These were all stars there.
The place was packed, so people were around the pool, and
Was it Barron?
No, I didn't see Barron at all. And
never
he fell
see
in
Barron.
The pool. Never see Barron.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is,
Nobody knows who fell in the pool.
No.
We got to find out who fell in the pool.
And Sean from Elmwood Park is the best guy in the world because the guy fell in the pool.
Because he got you a purse.
No, the guy fell in the pool, and we started clapping, he and I, because we're like, you are the coolest guy here now. And I said, Opa, congratulations, because I felt bad for him because he was so embarrassed. So made everybody,
I've been there. How do you fall in the pool?
Because there were so many people there, Dan. It was so crowded, and sometimes people were taking pictures and were teetering on the edge or... There was a lot of people
Maybe
there.
Maybe a little bit too much drinking.
But But Dr. Howard and Lexi Howard from Balance of Nature, they were there.
Oh.
My old friends. Mm-hmm. And so we were walking in to watch the film. Bumped into Rudy Giuliani, by the way, said hi. Talked to him for a little bit.
Oh.
And they whisked me and Dr. Howard and Lexi away because they thought I was there for the Melania party. She had her own little showing.
Oh.
So we get into the room with Melania and her friends, and then somebody rushed in and said, what are you doing here? And I said, I was told to go with this
I'm
way.
Part of the Balance of Nature Mafia. What do you mean, what am I doing here? Yeah, don't talk to me. You talk to the capo.
And then we were asked to leave.
The Balance of Nature people?
No, the Melania party. We were in they whisked us to the wrong room, so then we went back to the regular
Who was in the Melania party? Did you get a peek?
I didn't get a peek, no. Hmm. It was quick.
You know,
it's a quick takedown. But the best was Elvita King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, who's been on the show.
Right.
I was standing outside the hotel, you know, dressed up, ready to go. And she said, are you going to Mar-a-Lago? And I said, yes. She said, why don't you just come with us? So I had a lovely talk with her on the way to Mar-a-Lago. And she wants to come back on the show again, too.
Which room?
And we talked about abortion and about the overturning of Roe v. Wade and said black babies are getting slaughtered every day in this country.
So what room did you stay in at Mar-a-Lago?
I stayed at the Hilton West Palm, where Alveda King was and Matt Gaetz and Devin Nunes.
Well, that's
and all
fine
those guys.
For them. But why? The guy running Truth Social doesn't even get to stay at Mar-a-Lago? Nunes had to stay at the hotel?
Yeah, he was at the hotel, too. Oh. We all went out to dinner. We all walked to dinner to the same place.
Speaking of voting, this is noteworthy. Cook County Elections is excited to bring you permanent vote by mail.
Oh.
You may now apply online. You may apply online now to vote by mail for the June 28th gubernatorial primary election and blah, 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 blah. permanent vote by mail here in Cook County. What could go wrong? 2000 Mules. I already have the setup for sequel to 2000 Mules. Just so get tell your friends to true the vote. Tell Dinesh, let's get the cameras set up. Let's get sound and lights and get ready for action in Cook County, but maybe less so in the primary, but certainly in the general.
It was just fascinating in this movie how one person, one mule, and they followed him, would go to 23 spots in one night. I mean, within hours. And it wasn't just happening in Wisconsin and in Michigan and in Pencilsylvania. There's like 1,000-plus mules in the Philadelphia area. But they got paid, so they took a picture at the box. They got paid for each ballot that they shoved in there.
Right.
But there were a ton in Phoenix. There were almost 1,000 in Phoenix.
Yes.
So, and they were doing these ballots, too. They'd have safe houses where they'd pick them up. But a lot of the ballots were from people in retirement homes that were incapacitated. And so they interviewed family members next to their incapacitated relative saying, this person she's never voted. She hasn't voted in 20 years. And they put her name down on a ballot. So there's a lot of voter fraud out there. And they did the math, because that's what they did, and calculated that Trump would have won the election had all these fraudulent voting. It had not happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been in the Molly Hemingway camp for some time, and what she outlined in her book Rigged, and this seems to be more evidence along those lines.
But 2 million more people voted for Biden than Obama. Please. Did anybody see one Biden yard sign? Did anybody see a Biden bumper sticker?
Well, again, it's the changing the rules of the game. It's the structural changes. It's the rigging, to use the Molly Hemingway-ism. And we have this now a permanent feature, as long as the political ruling class stays the same in Chicagoland and Cook County, a permanent feature of Cook County, which, being the most populous county in Illinois has a pretty big impact on election outcomes here.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Derek in North Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Do you want to know who Amy wore, who else she met? What do you want to know? Hey, Derek.
No, actually, I just had a, good morning. I just had a quick question about your last comment about the Cook County wanting to go to permanent mail-in voting status.
Yeah.
In Springfield, if the state legislators actually ever really did do their job, can they eventually overturn that to where it goes back to, like, normal voting?
Yes, they could. States are in control of elections, as we learned. Thanks for the call, Derek. As anybody didn't already know in 2020.
But don't you think that's fraudulent? I mean, some people are going to vote twice.
In Cook County? No.
Wait, everybody should see 2000 Mules. It is frightening, because without secure elections, we don't have a country. Really, it's a banana republic. So, and this video of people just, one lady had gloves on and went from Dropbox to Dropbox, and one guy was trying to shove them all in, and they were falling on the ground in front of other people that were standing there watching, and nobody did anything. It's just weird.
So it was as advertised. We talked to D'Souza as well as Catherine Engelbert, the founder of the founder of True the Vote last week. And so as advertised, yeah. Yeah.
It's just heartbreaking.
Cook County, just to restate here, this is reading from the write-up on their website. Cook County Elections is excited to bring you permanent vote by mail. This option will allow you to vote by mail in all subsequent elections held in Cook County. You'll still have the option to vote by mail in a single election if you choose. You just apply online for the June 28th primary, and then your ballot is mailed to you. The clerk's office receives a ballot return envelope, and you get an email, and then you get an email when your ballot has been processed and counted. Vote by mail ballots will come with postage paid ballot return envelopes as well. So you don't even have to worry about going to get a stamp.
Oh, wow. So you don't. Wow. Nice. They're trying to make it really easy for you.
And if you need that, I mean, I'm assuming here, I don't know, but I think they're going to twin this with the COVID captain program for block parties. And if you need your COVID captain to come over and pick up the ballot, even fill it out for you. Your COVID captain will be happy to do that in the interest of saving our democracy and lives.
Really?
So perhaps, I mean, that's just my idea to add to the convenience because it's so difficult to vote.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so we need to make it as convenient as possible because we want 100% participation because 100% of people are paying attention and making informed choices.
Oh, and by the way, back to the, you remember how I went? I was here on what day was it? Wednesday morning?
Yeah.
I said I'm missing a black clutch purse and I asked Sean to help me out.
Mm-hmm. And he gave you his?
No, he didn't help me out. So I had to go to H&M and buy this plastic pleather purse to
were
take
you,
to the
Were event. You ridiculed by any of the fashionistas
I
at
got
Mar-a-Lago?
A few looks like, oh boy. Ooh, that's not a good purse. Not a good look.
Really?
That's right. Yeah, but seriously, Sean wouldn't help me out. So if you need a favor, don't go to Sean.
Wow.
Sean will not be there for
Sounds
you.
Like there's some tension within the Salem family now.
But we did miss mediate. You. We did miss you at the event.
Well, I wish I could say the same, but that would be an untruth. No, I'm sure you had fun. I've been there a couple times, and so
did you play golf there? Or what?
No,
because you mentioned that
there.
People were asking me and texting me why. What were you there for?
I was there for a few years ago. This is pre-pandemic for the West Palm Beach Republican Party dinner.
Okay.
This is several years ago now because a friend of mine's mother was being honored as a huge fundraiser for the party and for candidates.
Okay.
She's a big wheel in Florida Republican politics. And I was there for a Turning Point Turning Point dinner with our friend Tom Sedaka. Our friend Tony Sfantasini from American Eagle, that the Sfantasinis. So I was there for that too.
Okay.
So you know I'm all Mar-a-Lago doubt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Chicago is like an old man with a trophy wife, and then he runs out of money, and then the wife runs out on him. That's the story of Boeing. Hey, we had fun, Boeing.
It was a good 20 years.
But the $60 million in tax credits ran out. Our executives don't really want to be here. So we're moving to Arlington, Virginia, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Yeah, and the way that Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker are spinning this, they're saying, well, no, we'll still have a footprint here. Oh, do explain. What does that footprint look like? And they said, and Boeing needed to be near Washington, D.C. because they have government contracts, contracts.
Did they just get government contracts recently? Is that Boeing is in the defense contracting space?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Were they 20 years ago when they moved from Seattle to Chicago? Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, everything's about the spin. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick.
And I know the reaction is the dismissal, because there's no problems here. It's no big deal. Don't make a big deal about it. Overreacting. It's 400 executives. Right. So why was there $60 million in tax credits passed by the state? And by the way, the bipartisan combine hat tip John Cass was falling all over itself to line the pockets of a Fortune 100 company so they could locate 400 corporate executives here. And now it's no big deal. Well, it's our money, $60 million, and I know that's not a lot of money, and it's not a lot of jobs, and it's no big deal, but it does sort of bring cachet to the downtown. That is prime real estate, or used to be prime commercial real estate down there.
Beautiful building.
It does mean something, both in terms of what Chicago projects to the world and, you know, what our own sense of our status is, our cachet, I think. And it also is yet another canary in the coal mine that people don't want to be here.
400 executives making large salaries probably have big homes that they're going to have to sell.
Yeah, but and this is going on all over the state, and it has been going on for some time. It doesn't get reported because it's no big deal.
Well,
no,
on the same,
it's no big deal. State Farm in Bloomington, it's happening.
All
been
state.
Happening. Caterpillar in Peoria, it's happening. It's been happening. John Deere in the Quad Cities.
Maytag and
Maytag in Galesburg is gone.
Yeah,
a long time ago. ADM indicator, been happening long time. The divestment from Illinois. I know it's no big deal. Doesn't matter. We're fine. Everything's good. I got it. Everything's fine.
Everything's about timing. So the day that they announced that, you know, Boeing's moving its headquarters to Arlington, Virginia, is the same day they announced. But wait, look. Look over here. We've got a casino coming. They've decided on Bally's, and Mayor Lightfoot couldn't be happier.
I want those line of Illinois license plates that are queued up going to casinos
going
in Indiana
displays.
To be coming right here.
Of the three.
Yeah.
Queued up going to Displays. Yeah, I know. Northwest Indiana, too. I got it.
That's going to save us.
Right. Trade out.
Because it's going to pay the firefighters and police officers' pensions. That's what they're. The revenues from the casinos.
So first of all. Okay. So first of all, trade out a blue chip Fortune 100 company for a casino. Those are the kind of trades we make. Those are the kind of trades a kleptocracy makes. Those are the kind of trades that a urban center that is decaying makes. It's all marijuana and gambling and
prostitution will be next.
Well, you know, sure. If it generates revenue, why not? And secondly, it's going to. What did she say? Shore up the city's pension funds, create thousands of good-paying jobs, lead to a bright financial future for our city. Really? Do you agree with that, we're going to leverage a casino for a bright financial future in Chicago? By the way, Ken Griffin, you know, the hedge fund billionaire, founder of Citadel.
Yes.
Speaking of somebody divesting from Illinois, where he's in New York, in Miami. And speaking of... that sector. When does Terry Duffy pull up stakes at CME and put those servers in his pool house in Naples? The trading floors, that'll be interesting, especially Ken Griffin. Ken Griffin said previously, a casino comes to downtown Chicago, I'm leaving.
Really?
That's what he previously said. We'll see if that's what he sticks to, but that's the statement he previously made. He did not want a casino there, and this is when the casino talk first started. It's absolutely the case, because he knows that's not economic development any more than it's been economic development for the river towns that was going to revitalize. All the casinos were going to revitalize the river towns in Illinois. Has that happened? Is that what's happened? The downtown Joliet is booming thanks to the casinos?
No.
Downtown Aurora booming?
Well, the Chicago Federation of Labor is happy.
The Chicago Federation of Labor are whores.
Yeah.
So what? By the way, they also know nothing, shockingly, or they are willfully blind, about the unfunded pension liabilities. Oh, really? This is going to fund the unfunded pension liabilities? Does anybody know just the Chicago Firefighters Pension Fund, what the unfunded pension liability is? Anybody want to have a guess? I bet probably firefighters listening, I bet they have no idea. Because who pays attention? You just pay attention to the pronouncements from politicians, right? That's good enough.
Well, you mentioned it once, and then didn't you get a bunch of emails from firefighters? And what is the,
why should I do your work for you? You don't care. Nobody cares. Otherwise, you'd know.
Well, the money's not going
to
be there.
And otherwise, you'd know how silly this is. Remember how the lottery was going to end the discussion on K-12 funding? Is that what happened?
I remember the toll roads were supposed to be temporary to fund education.
Yeah, but I'm talking about gambling specifically.
Gambling. Okay.
Gambling as the panacea for our financial woes. Gambling as the credit line to finance our hopes and dreams. Is that what you think? Does anybody think that? I mean, other than the political ruling class and the proles that consume and repeat whatever they say for some ungodly reason. This is going to be great. Chicago and Halstead, that's going to be a real catalyst for making Chicago a world-class city again, because it's not now.
Well, Bally said this is a great way for Chicago to continue its recovery from COVID.
Well, what do you think Bally's is going to say? Yeah, Bally's is happy about it. Oh, by the way, you know, because Chicago's such a magnet. Chief Executive Magazine's come out with their rankings, best and worst states for business 2022. Chief Executive, you know, chief executives have a lot of influence on where investment decisions are made, mm-hmm. where corporate headquarters are located, expansion, contraction decisions. Chief Executive Magazine, best and worst states for doing business 2022. Number one, Texas. Number two, Florida. Number three, Tennessee. Are you sensing anything in common with the states that are at the top of the list? Is there any commonality between Texas, Florida, Tennessee? I'll go on. Arizona. Can I go on? North Carolina, Indiana. May I continue? Ohio. And the bottom five states? Washington State, New Jersey, Illinois, New York, California. Again, anything, you think of a Venn diagram. Is there a quality or two or a policy or two that you think groups the top 10 together and the bottom 10 together? Huh. Kyle and Woodridge, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Great work as always. I just wanted to comment real quick. It's mind-numbing that people think more revenue will be the solution. When you're trying to carry a bucket full of water that's essentially a cheese grater, it doesn't matter how much water you pour into the thing. It's never going to retain any of it. So you guys have a great weekend. Stay dry out there.
Thanks, Kyle. It's more revenue, but more revenue not through the creation of wealth. You're not creating
create jobs.
Casinos don't create wealth. Manufacturing sector businesses create wealth.
Am I to believe that the police and Chicago firefighters pension is $46.9 billion? That's got to be wrong.
It's $46.9 billion. What?
Dollars, and I mean that it needs to be funded. What is it? How much? Million, billion? What are we looking
at? Well, it's not in the millions, I'll give you that.
Okay.
By the way, I believe, I'm not sure on this, but I believe that the key to the success of Bally's Casino is not just getting people to stay here, not go to Northwest Indiana or Des Plaines, I suppose. Bringing convention business back to Chicago, I guess this will help on the margins. But it's also the PGA has to schedule more tour events in Chicagoland so that Phil Mickelson's in town more often.
Oh.
Did you see that?
Oh.
Phil Mickelson, according to a couple biographies in the works. One's coming out, Alan Shipnuck, who's a former golf reporter at Sports Illustrated. He says that Mickelson lost $40 million gambling between just 2010 and 2014.
Oh, he's got a problem.
So it's just interesting, just as an aside, you know, we talked about this when he got in trouble over the comments he made about the Saudis per this tour they're trying to stand up in the Middle East that's funded by the Saudis. And then so why would Phil, he's made $500 million in endorsements and purses over his career. Why would he put his brand on the line to go with Greg Norman and the Saudis? And the supposition was, you know, he's a big gambler. Maybe despite what you would think and all the money that he's made, maybe he's got financial issues. I mean, $40 million
that's
in just those 4 years. I don't know what's happened in the last 8 years, but that's a lot of money. You know, say it's $400 million. Okay, so that's 10%. Now, taxes, that $400 million he's made gross. So now that's more like 20%. And whatever carrying costs he has for the houses and the boats and the lifestyle.
Yeah, on his handlers.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, that's scary. But you gamble, so are you excited about this at all?
No, I don't care. I mean, I do. I like to partake in games of chance. But,
I like to partake in games of
chance. Yeah, I mean, it does nothing for me. I don't think this is some sort of wonderful benefit to the city at all.
Well, they're going to have a temporary casino until the big one's built at the Medina Temple in River North, right mm-hmm. by you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that'll open next year in 2023, and then the big one's going to open in 2026.
The only thing I could say is I suspect that Bally's will do a better job of policing their property than the fifth floor does in policing the city. So I assume the places will be locked pretty tight, but we'll see. You know, you can only do so much. I don't know. By the way, the Mickelson thing,
speaking
of gambling, one of my favorite lines of all time was the Sports Illustrated profile on John Daly. This is back when, I don't know, he was maybe after Marriage 3 and he was, you know, and Rehab Stint 2 or something. But this is back 15 years ago at least. But it was estimated at the time he lost $60 million gambling. And his response was, no regrets. I had a good time.
It was, you know, good time losing all that money.
The difference is I think John Daly is comfortable in that RV selling T-shirts outside of tour events. I don't think he cares about it. I think Phil, Golden Boy Phil, has a different sense of self, a different level of concern, a different
he's worried more about his image.
Different attitude towards status than John Daly did. So we'll see.
Oh, that's some scary stuff, though.
John in Crown Point.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Hey, Mayor Lightfoot had given out those gas cards for, like, underprivileged people who couldn't afford gas.
Yeah.
Well, now she's going to give out cards for gambling for underprivileged people who can't afford to gamble.
There you go. Thanks for the call, John. Tony, Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan. Yeah, Boeing's leaving, but they'll lie. They'll talk about all the other businesses coming in. They'll point to McDonald's a few years ago, on and on. But, Dan, I wanted to congratulate you on the casino going to be located so close to your house.
Yes.
And I'm sure crime will not go, you know, up at one notch. Not at all. And I'm thinking that the speedway that they want, you know, they want the little raceway under Wacker so people could get there quicker to the casino. Well, Mike Scott was saying that there's going to be pushback by the city council. That is amusing.
That's
amusing. So
I'm sure there'll be some, but I mean, it's not going to win the day, obviously.
But my favorite.
Thanks, Tony.
My favorite soundbite is one of the neighbors, you know, who lives nearby, you know, one of those towers by East Bank Club. This is what she thinks of you people, okay?
There's five preschools this area.
Oh, no.
That's just within this immediate area, a few blocks away. And there's a playground that they all use.
So?
They're worried about gamblers. That's going to, you know, hurt the neighborhood.
Who'd she vote for?
I have no idea.
Who she's been voting for, I wonder.
I wonder, too.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are going to go stalk, you know, gamblers are so deviant. They're going to stalk children at playgrounds.
Well, you bring an element, you know, and I'm not just talking about Skip Dillard. Former DePaul standout Skip Dillard. Remember Mike knows.
Tell me.
Remember Skip Dillard? He like robbed a guy outside the Aurora Casino.
Oh my gosh.
I got that right, don't I? Yeah, I think he did. Yeah. And that's what Tony's talking about too. I mean, you know, it's
unsavory characters.
Well, it's moths to a flame.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be.
It's also a 500 room hotel that's gonna be attached to Bally's.
I know.
So
it's outstanding.
And the artist rendition of what it's going to look like is fascinating, shiny, and there's going to be water taxis, and everything's going to be great.
I do like on the chip idea, though, I do like the idea of Lightfoot and all of the Illinois politicians' faces being on the chips.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be a nice touch. I think it would be a nice hat tip from Bally's to our political ruling class with a Tony Preckwinkle chip and a Lightfoot chip and a Pritzker chip.
And a Kim Fox chip.
Of them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
Walter Burnett. Don't forget the alderman now.
No, it doesn't. The alderman. The alderman. You know, they're fighting over the valet stand deal is right now. The alderman. The people we're talking about are really cutting it up.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We've been covering this story for the past week, trying to get to the bottom of it and see what both Lyons Township High School, as well as the Western Springs Police Department, are going to do about this beating that was meted out by a high school sophomore named Heaven Washington against a freshman student. And we have reported, as you know now, if you've been following this, that Heaven Washington was charged with misdemeanor battery. The friend of hers who filmed the beating and was cheering her on was charged with disorderly conduct. And he took to social media to talk all about it. He disclosed that he's been suspended for 17 days, but we don't know the status of Heaven Washington. There were rumors that she had been expelled. We don't know. The school won't say. They're hiding behind the student, a student disclosure law. There was another incident that Western Springs police say they're investigating, another alleged incident of violence that may have been retaliation. We don't know in which direction the retaliation, if it occurred, was coming from. That was the other day they're investigating. We don't have any information on that. The Western Springs Police Department has been, in my view, a little bit lethargic in this case. They just, as I understand it, interviewed the victim in the case yesterday. That's a week after the event, the beating happened.
Well, that's a lie, because I spoke with the police chief on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and he said, no, we've been in contact with the victim and her family.
Well, in contact is different than actually interviewing her.
I'm sorry, he did tell me that they interviewed her.
Well, that didn't happen until yesterday, as I understand, but we're about to get clarity on that. There's a question about the charges, whether they are appropriate per the beating that is on video. And the response from the Western Springs Police Department that Kim Fox's office could always level up the charges to felony charges is a punchline, no pun intended. Where do things stand? What is the relationship between the Western Springs Police Department and the school? These things are very unclear, but I have to say I'm a little bit underwhelmed by the response from the Western Springs Police Department, and I'm appropriately unsurprised by the response from the identitarians that run Lyons Township High School. For more on this, Andrew Stroth, managing partner at Action Injury Law Group. He is representing the girl who was beaten and her family. Andrew Stroth, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, where we are today is we are just asking for a full investigation by the Western Springs Police. The police department did contact me, their attorney, but just a few days ago was the first time the family, the father, and the young lady were interviewed. We were surprised that the family was not made aware of the criminal charges prior to them hitting the media, especially social media, and we just want to find out the truth. And it's our perspective that the administration was aware. The young lady, Miss Washington, that attacked my client had a history, or has a history, based on our knowledge of bullying. The parents and the young lady gave school officials notice that this other woman was threatening her. It was captured on video prior. And then if you watch the video of what happened, the video speaks for itself. And, I represent victims of civil rights cases all over the country. And I actually went to LT. I'm an alum of LT. And I know Western Springs. And you just don't think of these types of events and brutal attacks happening on a campus like LT, which quite honestly is one of the top high schools in the state. But the administration is responsible. The administration was on notice. And we just want to make sure that the young lady that I represent is safe and protected and accommodated by the school, and those that caused those actions are held accountable.
Well, how's your client doing, and what kind of injuries did she sustain?
Thanks for that question. She suffered a concussion from the incident. She suffered a sprained wrist from the incident. She had her hair pulled out. And then I think even beyond the significant physical injuries is the trauma. Imagine a 14-year-old freshman girl without cause or provocation, brutally attacked, not outside the school, not in the neighborhood, but at the high school. And what's so disturbing about the video is you can tell it was a premeditated attack. Mm-hmm. And then the other young person that recorded the video, to me, is also responsible. So disappointed that the charges are not higher, but I do know that Western Springs is ongoing with the investigation. I do know the principal at LT and the leadership is very concerned about this incident, but my perspective is, how do we stop this from ever happening again? And it should have never happened in the first place.
I mean, you agree, you sort of just said it, aggravated battery is the appropriate charge. Intentional infliction of great bodily harm is the standard. That sounds like great bodily harm to me.
Yes, for sure. And I think it's every parent's worst nightmare. I mean, you watch the video, and imagine if it was your daughter or your son
being attacked. It's terrible. And so is she the victim that you represent? Is she going back to school anytime soon or ever?
You know, for the time being, she's going to be doing her school remote because, she's not comfortable being back at LT at this moment. So the school is accommodating her with remote learning. Ultimately, the goal is for her to go back as a regular student to LT, but obviously her parents are very concerned and she's very concerned.
What about Heaven Washington? Is Heaven Washington still at school?
You know, the because of the laws and the council for LT has not shared with us details regarding Miss Washington. So
maybe you can ask her cohort, because he seems willing to share all kinds of stuff, mostly about himself so far. But he also called for justice for Heaven and so on and so forth. Maybe he'll tell us. I mean, I'm sure if he got 17 days, I'm sure she's not in school. But the question is she coming back to school? And we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And social media, right? When we all grew up, it wasn't the world we live in today. So the other trauma of this whole event is that this was all shared on social media.
Right.
So my client, the victim, is getting calls and text messages and emails, and it's just created a whole storm. And my issue I have, and the reason I took on the case, is the school was aware that this other young lady was a problem. They were on notice, and they didn't protect a 14-year-old freshman girl.
Yeah, give us details on that, because we've heard about that, but you would know what the truth is. So how were they on notice? Give us those details.
Well, again, our investigation is ongoing, our independent investigation, and so is the Western Springs Police. And I know there's been FOIA requests to find out more details, but it's my understanding that there was an incident prior that the school knew about. And then again, on the day of the incident, prior to the incident, my client knew this young lady was going after her, informed school officials at the highest level. The parents were called, and the mother of the victim also expressed concern. And then my client was sent back to class and then brutally attacked.
So that's what we know, but
there's more to come.
So, but was she, I had read in, I think it was West Cook News, that they had, earlier in the day, Washington had slapped her cell phone out of her hands.
Yes, that's our understanding, yes.
And then she went to the authorities, or not the authorities, but school administrators, and then they sent her back to class right away, and then she was attacked after that class.
That's our understanding, yes.
And so what's your sense of the dynamic here between the police and the school? I know, investigations are ongoing and so on and so forth, but the school resource officer seemed to indicate he wasn't told about this from the administrator that the victim went to tell about what was happening to her. The school resource officer allegedly was like, well, why wasn't I informed about this? And then the response from Western Springs Police seems a little tepid to me. What was your sense of the relationship here between the school resource officer, the police and the school?
Well, obviously some schools have police in schools or student resource officers. To me, if the student resource officer didn't know, that doesn't make any sense, because that's that person's job. I do know that Western Springs police do have a good relationship with LT, the high school, but
maybe
if there was
maybe
some
it's, maybe it's maybe it's too good.
Yeah, maybe. And again, I don't know what the SRO knew, the student resource officer knew or didn't know, but certainly should have known. And again, there was video that shows the reason why my client had so much concern was a video that was shared and watched with the administration. So again, from my perspective, the school is clearly on notice. I will give LT credit that they are trying to accommodate my client under Title IX and make sure she has everything she needs. But, how can a 14-year-old freshman girl be scared to go to school and then go to school and get attacked. It just can't happen.
Is there a civil complaint in the offing?
So, you know, while I do file lawsuits across the country, the first thing we do on any situation is do a full, transparent and independent investigation. So at this stage, I'm here to support the family. But you know, we want parties held accountable for what happened, both on the criminal side for Ms. Washington. And I think the school's got to think twice about what are their policies and procedures and how do they make sure that this doesn't happen again. So, you know, the family will take any legal remedy that they want to pursue. But at this stage, the focus is on making sure my client is healthy and safe and gets better, and making sure LTHS has policies and procedures and implementation that protects students at that school.
He is Andrew Stroth. He's a managing partner at Action Injury Law Group, representing the girl and the family of the girl who was beaten in the hallway at Lyons Township High School. Andrew Stroth, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This was Senate Majority Leader Pagliacci last year, March, at a pro-abort rally.
And they're taking away fundamental rights. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
Madman. Seriously. Is his eyeballs
sticking? You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Well, it's pretty charged language in the direction of the Supreme Court justices.
It sounds like a threat to me.
I mean, that's no big deal for a senator like Sheldon Whites only, somebody like that. But for decent people who otherwise are aghast when the suggestion is made a politician would try to influence a judicial decision. I remember that was very offensive to the left when there were suggestions that Trump was trying to do that in particular cases of much less import than Roe v. Wade. Elizabeth Warren picked up the Pagliacci mantle this week. She was out in front of the court with the pro-aborts, seeing who could be more shrill.
I am angry. Angry and upset. Angry and upset and determined. The United States Congress can keep Roe versus Wade the law of the land. They just need to do it.
I've never seen you so angry. You seem to be...
This is what the Republicans have been working toward this day. For decades, they have been out there plotting, carefully cultivating these Supreme Court justices so they could have a majority on the bench who would accomplish something that the majority of Americans do not want. 69% of people across this country, red states and blue states, old people and young people, want Roe versus Wade to maintain as the law of the land. We need to do that. And we have a right. Extremists, we've heard enough from the extremists.
Well, we've heard enough from the extremists. I agree with her. I've heard enough from extremists like Elizabeth Warren. I mean, how many times do we have to go over this? The majority, supermajority of Americans favor abortion bans after 15 weeks, which is basically the law in France, you know, radical right-wing France. But this is not about popularity. It's not about opinion polls. It's about what's constitutional and what isn't. And Roe v. Wade was terrible law. You even have the likes of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who've criticized it not because she didn't believe in abortion, because of course she did, and that it should be legal, but because it was just a weak case in terms of the legal reasoning that was offered. Speaking of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of their patron saints of the radical left, Ruth sent us. This is an organization apparently named in her honor that is targeting the five justices plus John Roberts, potentially at their homes. The organization has published the justices' supposed home addresses online to send protesters in their direction.
That could be a threat.
You can protest in any public space you want, but yeah, the tenor of the protest is more than Schumer-esque, actually. Here's an example. This was caught by our friend Alex Berenson, one of the blue check mafia types on Twitter. He tweeted out this. Interesting real-life trolley problem in America right now. If you had a chance to kill Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, the two oldest right-wing Supreme Court justices, should you do it while Biden can get his nominees to replace them confirmed? He later removed that tweet, not because Twitter made him do it. Of course not.
I mean, Twitter didn't take him away?
No.
Or he put him in Twitter jail for that?
Yeah. Yeah, he removed them upon further reflection, but not because Twitter made him do it. Alerts have gone out, including from our friends at Catholic Vote, Brian Birch's organization. TikToks being made instructing people to interrupt Catholic masses this week to protest the Supreme Court. Be prepared to protect your children, women, and the clergy. Keep your eyes open at mass this weekend. You have to keep your eyes open at mass because, number one, they make an assumption I wish were true but isn't, that the overwhelming majority of Catholics are actually pro-life and support the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Of course, too many Catholics have been infected by the liberation theology or social justice virus. But regardless, this is who they are. This is, ACT UP from a bygone era, throwing condoms at inside cathedrals to protest for more HIV funding, to protest the church's position on traditional marriage, to protest for the redefinition of marriage, and so on and so forth. This is who they are. They wreck institutions that don't bend to their will the first moment they don't. For more on all this, pleased to be joined by Jim Antley, politics editor, Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com, author of Devouring Freedom, Can Big Government Ever Be Stopped? Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
One aspect of this is sort of interesting. You've had some corporate response in the direction you would anticipate. Levi Strauss protecting women's reproductive rights, some video game companies. But the point was made by Chris Rufo and others. You're not getting the vociferous response from corporate America you got, say, with the Georgia Voting Rights Bill or initially with the Parents' Rights Bill in Florida. And one wonders if what DeSantis did to Disney is having an impact on what corporate America wants to do about the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, I think some of the pushback that they've gotten, reminds them that the old slogan, Republicans buy sneakers too, is still true. And, people can vote with their pocketbook. Now, where I think the rubber really meets the road is, when Dobbs is ultimately handed down, if they do in fact overturn Roe versus Wade, and the issue does get sent back to the states, it then becomes a little bit easier to decide you're going to do the sorts of things that companies tried to do in Georgia once states pass pro-life laws or the trigger laws that various states have enacted actually go into effect once Roe versus Wade is overturned. Then I think that's when you're really going to see how corporations are going to respond. But for now, yeah, I think the virtue signaling has been relatively.
And with respect to the response from the pro boards, actually, even before that, your colleague Tim Carney had an interesting piece and it used Tim Ryan, who's the Dem Senate nominee, congressman and Dem Senate nominee against J.D. Vance in Ohio, and used him as an example. And there's so many examples. We have them in Illinois with a Dick Durbin, with a Jesse Jackson, people who were Democrats but pro-life and now are abortion on demand, baby coming out of the birth canal and publicly financed. And it's just
right.
It's just so interesting how there is no room for the Dan Lipinski's anymore. I mean, there's no room for anybody who believes in parental notification or opposes late term abortion in the Democrat Party. It's that much of a sacrament to them. And one wonders if they're overplaying what they think is their hand with respect to demagoguing this issue to turn their voters out in November.
Right. I mean, Joe Biden is a very good example of this. I mean, he had a pro-life record for a period of his Senate career, as recently as the early 80s. He was supporting a constitutional amendment that would have overturned Roe versus Wade and sent the abortion issue
right
back to the states. You know, a lot of these guys from Biden's period of time flipped in time for the 1988 Democratic primaries, Al Gore, Jesse Jackson. So it's certainly been an ongoing phenomenon. I mean, even the Hyde Amendment now is too controversial for a lot of Democrats. Tim Ryan, though, we're talking about, you know, at least Biden was 30, 40 years ago. Tim Ryan was in the modern era a pro-life Democrat, and now he's for abortion on demand, taxpayer funding. You know, they certainly can overreach here, and there's a reason why, you know, Democrats in Ohio and the Midwest used to be a little bit more down the middle or even pro-life on this issue. That's where a lot of their voters are. There are a lot of Catholic voters and blue-collar voters in these states who are open to voting for Democrats, especially on economics, but are pro-life and socially conservative. And there doesn't seem to be any room for these voters in the Democratic Party anymore. And a number of those voters are key voting blocks for making Donald Trump president in 2016. So, you know, it's a pretty big risk, in my view, for them to just be so responsive to their own activists and not think of really the people who could be the swing voters in the election.
Jim, who do you think leaked that draft by Justice Samuel Alito? Who did it and why?
Well, I don't know a name. I mean, I just think logically it would be somebody on the losing side, right? So, you know, Stephen Breyer is obviously retiring, so his clerks will be leaving. You do have three liberal justices. I don't know for certainty, but if you think about it logically, you know, it's leaked to Politico. Clearly, there is an element of desperation to it. It just suggests to me that it would be somebody who is on the losing side of this issue and is trying to intimidate a justice. Now, could it have been a conservative trying to lock in the five by letting people know that this decision is out there? Yes, sure, it could have been. I think that's the less likely scenario. But, you know, anything's possible. It looks to me like something a more liberal person with access to the draft opinion had done.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that stands to reason, and everything that it's unleashed since its leak speaks to
right
why that, you know, logically follows. And what kind of confidence do you have in John Roberts ever identifying who the leaker is?
I think the investigation will turn up a person. I'm less confident that we will be publicly informed of who that person was. I think it's possible, but I do think there'll be some pressure to conceal that person's identity. They're going to view it as much more sacrosanct than a Supreme Court justice's home address. I'm a little skeptical we're going to be told, but I do think the investigation is going to turn somebody up.
That's a big problem if we're not told, because I mean, it just smacks of Adam Schiff conspiring with parties to bring Christine Blasey Ford forward during the Kavanaugh hearings, and I mean, Adam Schiff just conspiring generally. The first impeachment and so forth. That's not going to fly if there's a person identified. The other thing too is, you know, we're starting from the assumption it's just one person and he or she had no assistance or encouragement. That needs to be part of it as well. If this was something where there was a wink and a nod by somebody higher up, if it was a clerk.
Right. And that's what I think is most likely to be concealed. I think, you know, if there's a sort of sacrificial staffer that they can name, that they can out, they might actually do that. But if you had somebody higher up, if you even had a justice say, hey, let's leak this, that I think they're going to be pretty hesitant to tell us about. We'll have to wait and see.
In terms of the electoral political impact of this, 5 months from now, does this significantly influence turnout or move the needle substantially in one direction or the other, do you think? Assuming it is overturned.
I just don't think it does as much as Democrats are hoping for. I mean, if you look at the polls, economic issues, inflation, those are much bigger issues. I don't, in the snap polling that has been done, and there hasn't been a lot, admittedly, but there's been some. It's been done since the leak has happened. It doesn't look like it's moved the needle very much in terms of what voter priorities are. Politico, who got the leak, did a poll with Morning Consult. You know, only 8% say that women's issues, which includes abortion among them, is their top issue, to 41% say the economy. One area I do think it will help Democrats a little bit is, they have an enthusiasm problem among their own base voters. And I do think it'll help with that some. You know, if Roe is overturned, Democrats who might otherwise be unhappy with the Biden administration, how little they've been able to accomplish legislatively and through executive action, they might turn out anyway now because they see Roe and abortion on the ballot. Now, on the other hand, it's another issue where Biden hasn't been able, and Democrats in Congress, because of their small majorities, haven't really been able to do anything for them. So I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. But in terms of base enthusiasm, I think it has some benefits for Democrats.
He is Jim Antley, politics editor for Washington Examiner, WashingtonExaminer.com, author of Devouring Freedom, Can Big Government Ever Be Stopped? Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Amy, you know how all cliches are true?
Yes.
Beauty is only skin deep. The truth of that cliche is the Johnny Depp Amber Heard defamation trial.
It's getting so gross. I mean, she relieved herself on his bed. There was cavity searches.
Dropped the deuce, allegedly.
Yeah.
He allegedly searched her cavity.
Right. And then there was some sexual assault with a liquor bottle or something. I mean, these two, there's a special place in hell for this couple, because watching them air their dirty, disgusting laundry is sickening.
Well, that's what I said. You know, beautiful people on the outside and very ugly, just vacuous train wreck people in the inside. But here's the thing. The only thing I care about with respect to this trial, because I could not care less about those two, is the coverage by Ozzyman, this YouTuber.
Yeah.
I mean, his coverage. I don't even know who he's talking about half the time. There's so many witnesses and so many experts testifying for two sides and so on and so forth. But his commentary, as you see them pull up to go into the courthouse, and then throughout the day, the highlights. Well, you listen for yourself.
All right, I'm back. Where was I with day 11? Johnny's new business manager, Ed White. He's like, Johnny's paid his taxes and I've made a good financial plan for him. I've made a plan, everyone. Next up was the Scottish security guard. All you legends telling me to watch this legend. We're quiet, right? He seems like a legend. He confirms one night he took a photo where he saw a bruise under Johnny's eye. Amber's lawyers asked him if he saw Johnny during an argument with Amber once. He's like, I've never seen my boss's d-.
No.
Mr. Depp had his penis out of his pants.
Objection.
Of his pants, didn't he?
I think I would remember.
Relevance.
Amber told me that poo on Johnny's side of the bed was a practical joke gone wrong, says Starling Jenkins. So you reckon she had something to do with the poo? Oh, yeah, someone talks to you about a poo, you assume they know about the poo, says Starling Jenkins. We are done. Have a good weekend. I am off. Day 12, Jimi Hendrix is cranking in the car. Johnny! Is yelled from the sidelines. Cut to, hey, Amber. Why did you or a freeloading friend poo on the bed? Another security guard says he saw a can of Red Bull hit Johnny and Amber punch him. He was out getting a late night kebab for most of the argument, but what he saw when he got back. Now the testimony from Johnny's most up-to-date talent agent was interesting. I reckon a record was broken for most objections ever. Mum's friend was constantly half standing, basically because this testimony relates to damages, money, work lost, after the 2018 op-ed Amber wrote, but didn't write, but is credited as the author of. F***ing lunch break. It is truly an intense, graphic, violent logo.
Ozzy man. So if you want the abridged version of what's going on in that trial between those two ghastly people, Ozzy man on YouTube is the way to go.
Whew. You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Middle school teacher Casey Scott in Cape Coral, Florida, fired for discussing gender identity with her students. Now, this was actually before... This occurred before Ron DeSantis signed that parents' bill of rights into law. But regardless, here's the story of what happened to Miss Scott, Casey Scott, who is a pansexual. In case you wanted to know.
Which one is that? Oh, is that bi?
No, pansexual. Pansexual is I'm attracted to every human being, regardless of the gender or the gender identity.
Okay.
Yeah. The biggest tent possible.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Casey Scott is a first-year art teacher. She sat down with me today exclusively to say she believes that she was fired after some students here at Trafalgar Middle School began drawing LGBTQ flags.
A discussion happened in class, and because of that, now I'm fired.
That discussion, according to Trafalgar Middle School teacher Casey Scott, centered on student sexuality.
A lot of the kids came out to me like, oh, well, I'm non-binary. And a couple kids said, oh, well, I'm bi. One kid said they're gay.
She claims students wondered about her.
Oh, I'm pansexual. So, like, I like anyone despite female, male.
And married to a man. She says some students asked to create art expressing their sexuality.
This one's a trans flag.
She hung the pictures on her classroom door.
They said that it would be in the best interest if I just got rid of them now.
She snapped these pictures showing how she got rid of them.
I went over to the recycling bin. I grabbed all of their flags and all the kids were staring at me. And I crumbled their flags in front of them.
She was sent home. And then
I got a call from administration saying that, well, at this time, we are releasing you from your contract.
She showed us social media posts from students upset over her firing. However, the Lee County School District showed us complaints from parents and students explaining that they could create flags expressing who they are.
She was just being an ally. Was firing her to swift and severe a punishment. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. What's she supposed to do if a first grader in her art class comes up or starts drawing a LGBTQIA plus flag and wants to talk about it and has questions about the teacher's sexual identity, orientation, habits? What's she to do? She's captive to her students, isn't she? Isn't she? Hmm. Tony Stinnett, when you think about that, Tony Stinnett is a former curricula director in the city of Indianapolis. He writes about the progressive policies in the classrooms that have failed. I was a teacher. I know firsthand progressive policies in the classroom have failed, his op-ed over, at foxnews.com. He now is part of that Heterodox Academy group that was started by NYU professor Jonathan Haidt, a man of the center left, I'd say. Talks about progressive ideologies and their manifestation. As progressive ideologies were driven by a newer form of morality, teachers' colleges began sending out new teachers with progressive ideas. Reprimanding a student academically or socially was now seen as barbaric and abusive. In many cases, bad or violent behavior from students was attributed to systemic racial discrimination. He's just talking about one such example. Of course, there are the other examples, like we're discussing now, with respect to sexualization of children. There are other examples which he touches upon as well. The critical race theory, the racial polarization curricula. School property remained untouched by what was happening outside. Common moral foundation enforced by the home and school allowed students to find a purpose and belonging in participating as respectful members of society. But as those progressive ideologies took hold in the training of the trainers, or the grooming of the groomers, if you will, that's all changed. And now there seems to be a little bit of a pendulum swing, and perhaps Casey Scott is caught by it. But you're a first grade art teacher, and you throw up your hands if you have one kid because of everything that's bandied about on social media and in culture generally that raises the issue of sexual orientation or sexual identity, or wants to draw a rainbow flag for the purposes of expression. That is licensed to open up the whole discussion. No, it isn't.
I'm going to tell you that I think that this whole thing is staged, that she did this on purpose because of the parental rights education bill that was passed in Florida recently. Now she's a victim. They have to, you know, you got to keep this going, that they're being oppressed. Because she's married to a man, so does that make her pansexual? No.
She's married to a man, but she says she's pansexual.
I don't care. And who cares? Don't talk about that. If you're a teacher, you can't. I mean, isn't anything private anymore?
No. And, you know.
I never want to know my teacher's sexuality.
I want to know every detail.
No. Maybe if they had a newborn baby, they'd bring the baby to class. That was interesting, but, I mean, not.
You know, libs of TikTok.
Oh,
a montage has been put together by which was properly entitled Teachers of TikTok. And remember, the utility of these sorts of videos, snippets, these are teachers
that put it out there themselves.
Right. People who are presenting themselves as teachers. Oftentimes they'll say what level they teach. Oftentimes they'll even say what city or even a school district. And is it representative of a majority of teachers? Is it representative of a significant plurality of teachers? I don't know, but it's representative of what's going on, the agenda or the curriculum. I don't even know if you can call it a curriculum anymore. It really is an agenda. It's representative of the agenda that is being pursued in a majority of schools in this country. I can tell you that, whether teachers are enthusiastically going along or begrudgingly going along. It's happening. And they're very proud about it, many of these teachers.
Hi, I'm a queer teacher.
I'm gender fluid. I am also a witch.
I would come out to my students every October on National Coming Out Day. I would use that as an opportunity for my students to learn how to receive somebody coming out to them.
I ended up telling my students that I was gay. So they were asking me if I was, because I kind of alluded that I was. So I kind of let them wonder and ponder on it. So instead of teaching social studies today, they just asked me a whole bunch of questions about being gay.
Let's talk about gender roles and talking about them in the classroom.
Talking about gender is not something that's out of the realm for children.
Research says that there is no age too young to talk about pretty much anything.
Kids as young as 3 and 4 are actually aware of their gender identity.
If they know about it, they're ready to learn about it.
Also very aware of who they like and who they don't like. They're very much ready for these topics and are way more accepting than adults when it comes to discussing these topics.
My classroom is one of the gayest places probably on the planet.
Most days of the week, I come to school in stilettos so I can create an explicitly queer space for all of my students.
Everything is completely covered in rainbows. I've got flags everywhere. I've got queer literature.
Parents might complain, and there's actually a way to be really sneaky about supporting specifically queer students. Dropping a pink triangle somewhere in your room makes a huge difference because kids look for that.
Recently, we started wearing pronoun pins, and the kids get to pick a new pronoun pin. We have some that pick like she, her every single day, and we have some that change it up.
And I just double check with them if I call home what name they want, what pronouns they want, because a lot of them will just use their given name and their given pronouns. So just double check that.
I like to avoid gendered language when I talk to my students. My students really like guys, gals, and non-binary pals. I even refer to them as different animals, you know, just to keep it light and fun.
To say that pre-K through third grade are not ready for such topics is actually internalized homophobia and transphobia.
So part of the importance of all of those statements from all of those teachers, my classroom is one of the gayest places on the planet.
Wow.
Okay. Is this lie they're telling about how, you know, students are inquisitive. Students are raising these issues, and we want to respond thoughtfully to our students. That is not the dynamic here. The dynamic is you have these identitarian political warriors bringing their politics to the classroom. And in many cases, in an unvarnished fashion, there is not much nuance to it. There's no cleverness required. It is between the eyes. That's actually what's happening. And you might be right about that teacher in Cape Coral, Amy, that she's setting herself up to be a victim.
Oh, yeah. She's an art teacher. But, you know, oh, let's make flags. Come on.
And
it's low hanging fruit.
And regardless that you're right, you're certainly right that they're going to be looking for, quote unquote, victims. Say all she was doing was trying to, you know, respond to her kids and develop their sense of self. And
Republican-led state legislature in Florida is, you know, quashing her rights and all that.
Yeah, but it's not even that. They hide behind the kids.
Yeah.
What they're doing is for the kids, and it's responsive to the kids to obfuscate the actual direction of the discussion and who's directing it. And those teachers, that montage you just heard, I think make it plainly clear. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. First, let me state that the only thing first graders need to know about human sexuality is that girls, they have cooties.
Yes, right.
As far as this teacher goes, I think the most traumatic thing is she crumbled up the flags in front of the students. How traumatic would that be for the kid? Why didn't she just take the flags down, give them to the kids, and let them take them home? Is there a reason she had to crumble them up in front of the students? And it makes no sense. It shows a lack of judgment on her part. And that alone, I would have fired her.
Thanks for the call, Mark. The other thing, too, I mean, this middle school in Cape Coral, she talked about, like, a first grade art class, and she's got 5 non-binary and 1 gay and so on and so forth. Really? Does she really? Joe in Naperville.
It's part of the big lie coming out of that classroom.
Yeah, two quick things. You know, she should get fired because she starts discussing her sexuality with first graders. That is so inappropriate. That's sickening. And number two, why don't we just say she was fired because she didn't stick to the curriculum? Was the curriculum to speak about her sexual orientation? Was the curriculum that social studies person to talk about his sexuality? No. If it's not in the curriculum and you go off the rails, you should be fired immediately.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Joe. And that's essentially what the Cape Coral School Board, essentially what they provided in terms of an explanation for their decision to terminate her. And because she's still in her probationary period, not a member of the union, they could fire her straight away without cause, but they gave the cause, and the cause was going outside of her lane, going outside of the curriculum. And it was also worth noting, if you caught that at the end of the clip from the report that we played. So you had some parents complain in the direction of let's talk about gender identity. But importantly, you had some parents and students also register their disagreement with what she did and what she was doing with the school. And that's important. When there's something like this comes up, don't, you know, fall prey to the free rider problem. Be the one that puts a marker down for your family and for your kid with the school, because frankly, it provides backbone to administrators that generally speaking, you know, don't have very stiff ones. Tony on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Andy Lamb and Danny Dan. Do not
Danny
refer
Dan.
To me as Dan, yeah. Mm. That's your new pronoun.
It's a little too cutesy. I'm getting uncomfortable.
I would like you guys to refer to me from this point forward no longer as Tony from the South Side. I identify myself as a Wookiee warlock dragon slayer and a wine taster. Okay? So let's keep it at that.
All right. Thanks, Tony. I'm going to have to write that down. All right. Very good. Tony, the originator of the phrase Tangerine Jesus. Remember that classic from Tony?
Oh, yes.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's been quite the whirlwind in the last 48 hours on Wall Street. You had the Fed meet on Wednesday and announce a anticipated 0.5% interest rate hike, and the markets responded positively. And then that was greeted yesterday by a massive sell-off, which probably happens. It looks like it's going to continue into today, even though the jobs number for April, 428,000 new jobs created. Unemployment rate remains at 3.6%. If you think that number is relevant, I don't really. Here's what Jay Powell, Fed Board Chairman, had to say about the economy.
Things are going swimmingly.
On Wednesday, it's very strong.
The economy is doing fairly well. We expect growth to be solid this year, and we see household spending and business investment as fairly strong, even in the first quarter, which was relatively slow on some other fronts. So, and the labor market. If you look at the labor market, for people who are out of work and looking, there are lots of job opportunities. For wages are moving up at rates that haven't been seen in quite a long time. So it's a good time to be a worker looking to either change jobs or get a wage increase in your current job. So it's a strong economy, and nothing about it suggests that it's close to or vulnerable to a recession. Now,
what about the negative growth in quarter one? Does that suggest that it's close to or threatening a recession? He is right about the job market, and to buoy the 428,000 number for April, NFIB's chief economist William Dunkelberg reporting 47% of all small business owners reported job openings they could not fill in April, which is unchanged from March and about two times the historical average. There's a 64% of construction firms reported few or no qualified applicants, which was actually up a couple of points, indicating that you have a very tight job market. Jay Powell says wages are increasing. It's a great time to be an employee. The problem he didn't address when he was saying those things is, yeah, but they're not increasing as fast as inflation is, Jay. And so the prices at the pump and at the grocery store are eating away any increase I've seen in my wages and then some. For more on all this, the implications, the Powell pronouncements, we're pleased to be joined by Brian Westbury, chief economist at First Trust Portfolios here in Chicagoland. Brian, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, good to be with you.
So 428,000 jobs and those words from Jay Powell, no recession in sight, 2% growth for the rest of the year, according to whoever he's listening to. And they're working on the inflation thing with this rate hike and more to come over the summer.
Yeah, we have to fix inflation. I mean, that's one. It just has to be done. I'm not convinced that the Federal Reserve is going to be able to do it. We can dig into that a little bit more. But this year, I think in 2022, he's right. We aren't going to have a recession this year. The Fed is lifting rates. The government budget deficit, the money we borrowed and handed out for everybody to spend during the pandemic, it's going to be smaller this year. So both of those things you can think of as kind of headwinds, if you will. We have less government spending, which I don't think is good in the long run, but it can pop us in the short run. And the Federal Reserve's lifting rates, those are headwinds. But the tailwind is that we're opening up. We're finally, done with all the COVID restrictions. So all of these services that haven't, fully been open for 2 years are right now opening up. And that means this year we're gonna add 3 or 4 million jobs.
Go ahead, Amy. Well, but so many people are leaving the workforce. I mean, now we're adding new jobs. I mean, what are we gonna do?
Oh yeah, there is no doubt that some people have retired early, and there's a reluctance of a lot of other people to come back. Lots of things have. First of all, we did unprecedented things. Never have we locked down. Never have we printed $4 trillion, borrowed $5 trillion. So trying to analyze all this, and so Amy, you're absolutely right. People are leaving. There's psychological issues that happen with this. It's a life-altering events that we just went through. But I think the number one thing that held back the job market is that we paid people not to work.
Yep.
And they were talking about that Build Back Better plan, $4.5 trillion, and it did not include unemployment benefits, but people thought it did. And now everybody's realizing, first of all, that thing's not going to pass, and second of all, it wasn't going to help me anyway. And now I'm out of money. I've spent all of my savings, and people are having to go back to work. We've gained 2 million jobs this year so far. It's not because everything's great. It's because we shut everything down and now we're opening everything up.
Yeah, but this is jobs, 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 and that's all the White House wants to talk about as well. But it's more complicated than that.
Absolutely.
So speak to that complication. Even if you continue to see Jay Powell being particularly attentive to inflation with a couple of or a few more quarter or half point increases.
Yeah, the thing I look at this is don't look at these job gains as some sign of a booming economy. I mean, normally we have recessions and then we have recoveries. And that's what, in part economics is the study. Why did that happen? Why did we have a recession? How do we get out of it? How do we get in it? Well, this one we know. We locked down the economy and now we're opening up the economy. And so anybody that calls it a recession then a recovery and acts like it's some kind of normal economic event, it's just not true. But we still have to kind of get back to where we were, if you will. And all the supply chains are still a mess. Now, there's something I don't find enough analysis of this. And I need to spend some time digging into it. But one of my theories about where the economy and jobs are today is that during the pandemic, the winners, if you will, the corporate winners, were Amazon. These big, Amazon, obviously, online delivery, the big box stores that were allowed to stay open, and so, Amazon added millions of workers during the pandemic, so that when you come back, you've now lost millions of people that worked in all those small restaurants, and no wonder they can't find workers because they were forced to close, and then the big stores were able to hire those people during the pandemic, and if everything worked out and they treated them well, they're not going back to where they were.
But I
don't know how.
Yeah, but that doesn't. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, I just don't see how you can just focus. And I'm not saying you're doing this, but this is sort of what's being done at the federal level. You just focus on essentially squelching demand through interest rate hikes, and you're not doing anything on the supply side. I mean, that's the recipe for stagflation, which is what we saw in quarter one. Now, whether that extends or not, that's an open question. But it seems like they're only talking about one side of the equation and the wrong side.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Dan, so many people don't remember or have read. You don't have to actually have lived through it. You could have read about it. The 70s and the stagflation that we had there. And that's where, there we had 13% unemployment rate and a 13% inflation rate. Today, We have a 3.5 roughly percent unemployment rate and an 8 or 9% inflation rate. So it's a little different, but that goes back to this opening up. But this inflation that we're living with is caused by the same thing that caused it in the 70s, and that is the Federal Reserve printed too much money. And, you know, this is a whole nother topic we could talk about sometime, but it used to be that interest rates and money supply were connected, and they are now decoupled. So yeah, the Fed can talk all at once about how it's going to raise rates 5, 8, 6, 9 times, but if they don't slow down the money supply growth, then it's not going to actually fix inflation. It does mess with the economy.
Well, and also just on the inflation number, there's running at 8.5% and so forth. I mean, the way that inflation is measured is sort of best case, sort of rosy scenario because of what's included and not including in attempting to measure it. So it seems to me that that number undershoots the reality of the inflation that a lot of middle income Americans are feeling. And thus, you know, what you think you're doing to move a number at the macro level may be somewhat disconnected from what people will still be feeling at the micro level.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, look, there's no doubt we have printed 40% new money. And that means unless we increase the output of our economy by 40%, then whatever the difference is, if we're only able to increase our output by 5%, then we're going to have 35% inflation over time. I don't mean this year. I mean stretched out over a period of years. But it's here and it's here to stay.
And on the supply chain issue, there's the ports that are backed up and Shanghai on lockdown, and that doesn't help. But there are other issues too, aren't there, that don't have to do with snarled supply chains, that just have to do with capacity. And this is in part the unfilled jobs, but everybody talks supply chain. So when things get worked out at the ports, everything is going to snap back to pre-pandemic levels. And that's not the case.
No, it's totally not the case. And the ports aren't even close to being back to normal. I mean, normally on days, they only had zero, one or two ships there. There's still 30, 40 a day. And so, you know, it used to be 150, you know, but so that's slowly becoming better, but we're still a long way. All this happened because we locked down the economy. Yeah. I think if we don't hear people, leaders, talking about how that we should never do this again, we haven't learned a lesson. The Swedish model is the model, and let's leave all the COVID discussion away. But let me just talk quickly about lockdowns. The free market system processes billions of pieces of information every day. And, I mean, you think about making a pencil. You got to get the wood. You got to get the little metal thing that holds the eraser on. You got to get the yellow paint. Well, every one of those things takes millions of people to do. And whoever gets the wood for the pencil doesn't even know you want a pencil. And they need equipment. They need food. They need a truck. They need a bed to sleep in. They need clothes to wear. Think about how many million people it takes just to get the wood to the pencil factory.
All right. Well, hey.
Go ahead.
Well, Leonard Reed. In response to your Leonard Reed, I've got Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, in his new book, How to Prevent the Next Pandemic, says of lockdowns, the evidence is clear they reduce transmission, and that stricter lockdowns reduce transmission more than looser ones do, but they're not equally effective everywhere because not everyone is able to comply by staying in one place. Lockdowns may not be necessary in places where the disease burden is modest. They're also more effective in countries where residents have less of a voice in the country's affairs, and the government's in a position to strictly enforce lockdowns and other mandates. What all this means is there's no single ideal mix. Context matters. Protective measures need to be tailored. But he certainly is not opposed to promoting lockdowns in the West, his new book.
Yeah, he's absolutely wrong. And the point I was making there, it is, read Leonard Reed. It's an essay called Eye Pencil. And it just you can't come away from reading that essay without understanding how complicated the system is. So when Joe Biden stood up and said, "I'm going to fix the ports," I laughed. I'm like, "How are you going to fix the ports? You can't even make a pencil." Because for politicians to say they can run the economy, or for Bill Gates to lord over everyone and say we have to do this, I mean, we could debate about whether they were effective. I don't believe they were, and I think he's wrong on that. But that's why we have these supply chain issues, because we destroyed the supply chains by locking down, and then at the same time, we paid people and gave we borrowed money from our kids on the credit card today, and we bought stuff while we weren't producing. Right. So we stopped the production of things, but increased the demand for things, and it's a disaster, and it's going to reverberate for years to come, and longer in terms of life, but. That's where this is coming from. Anyway, the whole point is I do believe the opening up this year, the full blown opening up of the economy is going to keep adding jobs. We will end up having growth this year. What I worry about is 2023 or 2024. That's where the problems come in.
What about what about risk assets for the rest of this year? Are you in the Paul Tudor Jones camp that this is, you cannot think of a worse environment to be holding equities or bonds?
No, well, bonds, absolutely. Even a 3% 10-year doesn't even come close to rewarding or paying or investors for the inflation that we have. Interest rates should be a lot higher than they are today. You know, people think a 5% mortgage is high. That's not high when you think about inflation. Mm-hmm. If inflation's 8 and you can borrow at 5, you're paying back that loan with money that's cheaper than when you borrowed it.
Right.
So I'm not with on bonds. I am on equities. Stock market profits are going to grow this year. Believe it or not, they're going to be up to about 10% the first quarter. Almost 80% of companies beat their estimates. We're seeing 7% profit growth. And I think they'll grow about 10% for the year. And the equity market today is, I would finally say, it's fairly valued. It is not in a bubble, but it's not cheap. We were undervalued for over a decade. That's when everybody started calling me a permabull, Dan, because I was bullish for 10 years. But I look back, and what did the market do for 10 years? It just went up. But that's because it was undervalued. Now our models say we are fairly valued.
All right.
So, you know, that means when I kind of look at that, it means like there's an equal chance of us going up or down. And I know that sounds weird when you say it like that, but what makes you go down normally is a recession. And I don't think we're going to have a recession this year.
He is Brian Westbury, Chief Economist at First Trust Portfolios right here in Chicagoland. Brian, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open my
top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's that time of the week. Open Mic Friday, taking your calls. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. With comments, compliments, criticisms, general crack pottery. And Amy, tell us again how President Trump greeted you at Mar-a-Lago yesterday.
Well, I was standing alone, you know, and I saw him walking down the stairs. He saw me at the bottom of the stairs. Uh-huh. And he came up to me with both hands like this, and he said, "Wow."
Yeah.
What a natural beauty. And look straight at the yams or the gams. What do you call legs?
The gams.
The gams.
Getaway sticks. Yeah.
get away.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then he liked what he saw, Dan.
And you said, duh.
And I said, I'm taking stop, please.
Oh.
No, I said, I'm my Amy Jacobson. I work at Salem Media. And all the producers, oh, this film's going to be, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I'm trying to get him on the show. But he was respectful, and he lost a lot of weight.
Did you say, Mr. President, I had no idea you were a leg man? Did you say that?
No, I didn't, but I should have, because that would have been funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But then he had to be rushed off, and I did introduce him to Dr. Howard from Balance of Nature, and Trump knows about Balance of Nature and might start taking it.
Okay, so stop with the pitching.
No, no, I'm just saying what happened.
So.
And then he said, where's Dan Proft? Because he's better looking than
right.
you.
So he said, wow.
But you're going to start with the hands together and go,
what a natural beauty. I can see that happening, actually. And then,
because it did
and
happen.
Then did he say, what do you think of Trump?
Did
he say that?
No, he didn't.
He didn't fish for a compliment back?
No, he didn't.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
But there's a lot of who's who at that party.
Mm.
Laura Logan was there and her friends.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. But it was a good time. But I'm looking at my hotel bill right now. I got, are you ready for this? $28 urban destination charge. What in Lord's name is an urban destination charge?
From
the Hilton West Palm.
The Hilton West Palm. I don't know.
That's where all the congressmen were staying.
Did you get transported there from the airport? Well, how'd you get there from the airport?
Yeah, but I took an Uber. No, this is a charge from the hotel, urban destination charge.
Well, they got
$28.
They got to pay for the infrastructure in West Palm Beach somehow. I don't know.
Anyway, but it's a great movie, and we have to plug this because obviously Salem Media are executive producers of this, but sold out in Chicagoland area. So what you can do, there's a virtual premiere tonight, tomorrow, Saturday, May 7th. Go to 2000mules.com, 2000mules.com, and there it's either going to be Dinesh D'Souza that you can do a live Q&A with, Eric Metaxas, Larry Elder, and others. So again, that's 2000mules.com, and you need to see this movie, Dan. It will change how you feel about the election, because I was on the fence. Well, no, I was on the fence, and after seeing that, I'm not on the fence anymore. I'm all in.
All right. It is Mother's Day on Sunday, this was interesting, this video that was posted by a U.S. Senate candidate. Her name's Kathy Barnett. She's a Republican running for the nomination for Senate in Pennsylvania. That primary is just a couple of weeks away, less than that now.
Yeah.
2 weeks from last
Tuesday.
See how
Dr. Oz does.
Dr. Oz, McCormick, and her, and they're very close in the polling that I've seen. She's got a shot, it would seem. Listen to Kathy Barnett's story.
Until I looked at my birth certificate for the very first time and just kind of studied it. Her gender, they called her a Negro girl, and that was the first thing I saw, and it just kind of grabbed my heart. But then I saw her age, and she was 12. And that just really struck a chord in me, because I realized just how young my mother was when something so horrible had visited upon her. Even to this day, it's a very hard word to say, but my mother was raped, given her young age. At 11 years old, my father being 21.
It was hurt. We was all devastated. But my mother said, you're pregnant, so we're going to get through this. And she helped me get through it. I don't want to use the word choice. She was going to be born. I didn't have a choice to say, you're going to live, or I'm going to abort you. That wasn't a choice for me. And I thank God it wasn't a choice for me.
As a child, I knew no difference. I was loved, and I felt loved. It gave me a greater appreciation for my mother. It helped me to forgive a lot of the mistakes someone at that age, having gone through such trauma, would have made in their own parenting. But it definitely made me become very adamant about the sanctity of life, of all life, regardless of their conception, regardless of how they arrived, that I am valuable, I'm worthy, and my life has purpose. From me has come two very beautiful and charming and smart kids, married to a wonderful husband. We've made a life for ourselves, and none of this would have happened
if the exception to the rule had applied.
And if I had made that choice, where would I be at right now without my daughter?
So pretty powerful wow. personal story there in Pennsylvania against the backdrop, not just of Mother's Day, but of course of the Dobbs decision that's pending at the Supreme Court level. And, yeah, sort of brings it home when you talk about actual human beings, real names, real people, and not just talk about them in the abstract or as statistics. Makes it a lot more complicated to abide the position of the pro-abort left, doesn't it? All right, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hi, I got a few things here, guys. Happy Mother's Day, Amy. Dan, happy Mother's Day to your mother. I'm sure she's proud of you. You're all you've accomplished. Wonderful. Amy, I sent you an email yesterday about what's happened to the economy so far in the first quarter. So please read it if you get a chance. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday.
Homework
to
assignment.
My husband.
Okay, happy birthday
you
to your husband.
Please read it. It's so good because it explains what's gone on just this quarter and interest rates and whatnot. And the cow guy, he was right. And you asked me a long time ago what my concern was about the pandemic, and I said the economy right away. That was in 2020. Anyway, happy birthday to my husband and to my brother, Jim, who is turning 60. He'd be the first male in two generations on my father's side of the family to make it to 60. So congratulations, Jim. You broke the curse. I know.
What are the women doing to these men?
Yeah, exactly.
What's
good question.
Yo? They have a genetic problem. You know, it's just been the way it has been. So I got to watch out because I keep forgetting I have half those genes, you know. And I thought I had a heart attack a couple weeks ago, but didn't happen. Anyway, I want to make a comment to the young parents out there. You are the young ones. You are the parents of your children. You are not their friend. And being a parent is harder than being a friend. So step it up. And I just generally, I work with a lot of young parents, and I'm finding it's disturbing to me that that's kind of like what they do and kind of what they prefer.
Right.
I've seen it over and over. Hang on, I got one last.
All right, let's go.
My daughter, my wonderful daughter down at St. Louis University, and I only brag. I wouldn't brag on Facebook. I hate that kind of stuff. But she won the Unsung Hero Award at SLU this year. Big deal. It's a big deal. She got a big plaque, crystal thing, and Unsung Hero. I'm so proud.
For doing
of
what?
Me.
What is that? Like a philanthropic work?
RAing this year. They had 4 suicides total. It was a bad year. They had 9, you know, 9 with MIT this year, if I know right. So she got those kids on her floor through it. It was a lot of PTSD, a lot of psych transfers, a lot of trauma after trauma, and it's
right.
she did it and
well,
so congratulations
to your daughter. Go Billikens. All right, thank you, Mary Kay, appreciate it. Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Love listening to you guys from here. It's just the fact that the Chicago accents and all that.
Well, I have an accent.
That's what I heard that too at Mar-a-Lago. Someone said, oh, you didn't have to tell me you were from Chicago.
Mm.
Like, what are you talking
Chicago,
about?
The A's.
What
it's
you
the
talking
A's.
Hey,
yeah. Hey, D's, and now we're going down to the Jewels, huh?
Mm-hmm. Are you
oh, boy.
Kidding me?
Well, bish.
All right.
So what I'd like to talk about is, please focus on the Sean Caston stiff. He and Marie, I can't even remember.
Newman.
Trying to out-left each other.
Hello, Newman.
Hello.
Well, Sean Caston and Marie Newman are a couple of P-hat communists. I understand that.
And they're totally trying to out-left each other.
Oh, I know.
I know. And then
a half dozen full of Republican candidates.
And then, yeah, and Keith Peacow is going to win that primary, and Keith Peacow is going to win that seat. Thanks for the call, Kevin.
I mean, Sean Caston's not worried, you know, Roe v. Wade being overturned, that it's going to put a strain on Illinois' healthcare system because we're 30,000 more abortions a year.
I know. He can go burn his bra or whatever. Keith Peacow is the candidate that should come out of that primary. He's the candidate that can beat Caston or Newman. That's all there is to it. John in Bridgeport.
Dan has spoken.
Morning, guys. Real quick. Hey, Cardinal Supich, Roe v. Wade's about to be overturned. Where are you? You in the Archdiocese. You could speak up here. You light us down during COVID, and you're lighting us down right now.
Thanks, John. That's all. Thanks, John. Eduardo, Midway.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day to everybody. I'll be taking my mother to breakfast on Sunday, so that's I nice. Definitely will not be forgetting. Yeah, I want to say the CDC was checking people out here in the nation as far as during COVID, but you know, you had this ex-CIA agent, I saw this on the Daily Mail, who was drugging women in Mexico. So who was checking him out?
Well, yeah, the who polices the FBI, that question persists, doesn't it? Thanks for the call. Eduardo, Rich, Indian Head Park.
Yes, good morning, Dan. Good morning.
Hold on, Rich. Rich, call back because you're on the chipmunk line. We've got a problem with that line for some reason.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, see? No, but I like the chipmunk line.
I don't. It's like Alvin and the Chipmunks running up. It's like after about 5 minutes, it's like I can't take it anymore.
Let him talk for 5 minutes.
No, but I'm just thinking about that. I hate that squeaky, you know, that's just annoying. Sounds like Jennifer Tilly. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. Another good week of discussions. And Amy, thank you for your update on the Mar-a-Lago visit.
Yeah.
How about and some Twitter comments and some pictures?
I know, I'll send out pictures, but I'm scared I'll get fired by my other job. Isn't that so sad?
Well, thanks for the call.
And then the picture I took with Trump, I look like a frog.
Why are you going to be? You don't. And why are you going to be? You just announced you took a picture. You even announced you've been there. So what's that? Now it's sort of past post to then put the picture up.
I just want to get through the playoffs and I'll post.
Oh, come on. Stop being such a baby.
You know what? I shouldn't be a little wuss that I'm.
Exactly.
Being. All right, I'll man up.
Provide an example for your players. Goodness sakes.
What about the picture with Marjorie Taylor Greene? MGT.
I mean, I don't think you need to put all the pictures up. To Trump and maybe Laura Logan.
Oh, God. And her friends.
Hmm.
Snuggling my head in her bosom. I'm like, okay, this is weird. Can somebody. Sean! Sean, I had
feels
call
like
Sean.
The womb.
Sean had to help me out.
Joe in Plainfield.
Hi, Dan and Amy. When I called on Earth Day, I was really nervous, and I even am now. Just the power, immensity of the power of your words and your. Anyway, I just wanted to try to share something from the Gospel of Peace, Essene Gospel that she scrolls. It's about their earthly mother and Amy. Happy Mother's Day, and here it is. And after this manner, pray to your earthly mother, our mother, which art upon earth. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, and thy will be done in us as it is in thee. As thou sendest every day thy angels, send them to us also. Forgive us our sins as we atone for all our sins against thee. And lead us not into sickness, but deliver us from all evil. For thine is the earth, the body, and the health. Amen. Thank you. God bless you so much for letting me say that.
Thanks, Joe.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. It's very nice of Joe.
Speaking of penance, Tom Sedaka in Barrington. You're
in
Chicago.
Tom, who had to sit in regular class on the way home yesterday. Must have been so hard.
Oh, hi, guys. Tom, he, him, it, we, they.
Wait a second.
He had to sit in the back of the plane with us people.
You're flying commercial now, Tom? What happened?
I've always flown commercial.
Oh, my
there you
God.
Go, Tom.
No, come
Tom,
on.
Are you sweating right now? I want to know if you're perspiring.
Amy.
Are
Amy,
you? Just
I
answer
stopped,
the question.
I stopped sweating once we crossed the border into Illinois.
Okay. This man.
You're really funny. Anyway, I was calling to say, yes. Tom, he, him, it, we, they.
Yeah, right.
Happy birthing person's day. This Orwellian speak is a bitch, but I'm getting there.
Uh-huh.
No, you guys have to see, Dan, you got to see 2,000 Mules.
I'll see it.
I'm speaking to the listeners now.
I know how it
Please
ends.
Please see it, yeah. But... Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, when you walk away from there, the closest thing I felt like that was after watching 13 Hours and saying, how could our country do this to our servicemen?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how could our, you know, I know how our country could do this to our citizens. But the most important thing, take that anger, take that disappointment, and channel it into a call into your congressman, the AG's office, and tell them to see it and do something about it.
All right.
Anyway,
thanks for the call,
great
Tom.
Great chat.
Thank you, Tom.
Have a great weekend.
And great seeing you, Tom. Yeah. See, Tom Sudeikis was there. And
all the heavyweights were there. I know.
Gary Rabine was there. Gary sat coach with us, too, on the plane, by the way.
The man of the people.
He was handing out his brochure, too, to the people. It was so cute.
Always be closing. Sandra, Northwest Side.
Yes, I would like to ask everybody to pray or light a candle or visit the cemetery for those great mothers that have passed, including my own mother, who was a beautiful and very dedicated mother, and there are plenty of them there resting in peace. Thank you.
Oh,
thanks,
thank
Sandra.
You, Sandra.
Appreciate that.
I'm all sad.
Rich, Indian Head Park.
Yes, good morning again, Dan and Amy. I had a couple of things, but I know you're pressed for time, so instead of talking about what the young kids should be taught in school, I'll go to, did you see the 6-year-old little boy that ran a marathon in Ohio?
No.
And how the parents got a pushback? You didn't see that. He was 6 years old. He ran a 26.2 marathon.
And we know him.
And his parents got a big blowback on it, saying how they could let the boy that age run that. Well, the little kid wanted to run it. They monitored him. They let him rest, you know, through the whole marathon. But the point I'm trying to make, everybody pushes back on that. Where's the pushback on killing babies up until their 8th and 9th month? I don't understand that.
Thanks.
We need a bigger pushback on that than a little boy running a marathon.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Chuck and Delavan to close it out.
My mom died 15 years ago. I'm not going to visit her grave. I found out she voted for Joe Biden 2 years ago. Hey, got the big gun show coming up. Time to come up and sign my signature. I'll be up there against Congress. So all my Wisconsin buddies, please come to Racine tomorrow to the gun show. And you guys have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks, Chuck.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.